Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Corporate Vice President, Windows Phone Program Management, Microsoft, Joe Belfiore.
Good morning. My name is Joe Belfiore. I run program management and design for Windows Phone, and I'm excited to be here today with all of you. Actually, let me ask, do we have Brandon Foy in the audience up here somewhere? Brandon Foy? Can you come up here, Brandon? That video you all just saw, Brandon made. I want to introduce Brandon. I don't think Brandon knew we were going to do this. Here, turn around. Brandon is 24, is that right?
Yes.
24, and Brandon just made a fan video on his own. Yeah. Accurate? Yeah. Posted on YouTube. Yeah. A bunch of people forwarded it to us and said, man, this video is great. You guys should make TV commercials like this video. So we said, well, that's a cool idea. And we reached out to Brandon and said, Brandon, would you make a video for us, a commercial of all our developer apps for Mix to show at the conference? So that video you saw, Brandon said yes. Brandon made that video as a passionate member of the community to show a bunch of the work that you all did. And we are excited to have you here. So what did you guys think of Brandon's video? Cool. Now, actually, one more thing. Do you think you like it enough that you could help us tell other people about it? Get your Twitter clients ready, because what we'd like to do is, if we get enough people looking at it, we'd like to actually turn it into a TV commercial. How does that sound? Wow. So get your Twitter clients going. Here's the URL. Brandon's video is on youtube.com/windowsphone. If we can get 200,000 views, then we're going to put his video on TV. So we just wanted to start with that as an example of great support from our community. Thanks, Brandon, for coming. So long. It just felt like a good thematic thing to do since the community matters so much to us. Now, before I jump into a bunch of content about Windows Phone futures and what we're going to be doing, I want to spend a little bit of time on our update situation. Many of you probably followed. I did a brief, informal intro video for Mix on the Mix website, and I, out of lack of preparation, mistakenly said something like, most people have the February update, and I was wrong. So I posted a comment on the blog acknowledging the mistake that I made and said when I came to Mix, I would talk a little bit about updates and explain a little bit about what's going on. So I want to do that for 2 or 3 minutes before I jump into the content. The first thing that a lot of people have asked about is why are the updates later than we expected? When we did our announcement, we said that we'd have the copy-paste update available early in the year. We had expected it to be earlier than now. It's now rolling out. It's not available to everyone yet because some mobile operators are still testing it. And I wanted to talk a little bit about why that happened. We had finished our software and handed it off to our team that does the update process, and they actually started deploying the update. But what happened was we found issues with the way the update was getting deployed on phones because of things that we hadn't anticipated that happened as real phones were manufactured. And I'll give you an example of this kind of thing. We'd done lots of testing on pre-manufactured phones, but as phones were coming off the manufacturing lines, some of them had characteristics that we hadn't seen before. One example was less than 100 phones coming from one of the handset vendors had a manufacturing setting that was left on the phone to indicate that something had gone wrong in flashing the phone in manufacturing. The phones got out in the wild, they worked okay for end users, but when we tried to apply the update, it switched the phone back into a factory diagnostic mode, so the update didn't work correctly. We saw a few things like that. There was no one issue, and none of the issues were particularly widespread, but as we started doing the update, we didn't know whether they were widespread or not, so we stopped, and we added extra capability and infrastructure to the way we did updates. We patched our Zune PC client. We improved the way we do throttling to get updates out to people in sort of a gradual way, and that took extra time that we weren't anticipating at the time of launch. So we felt it would be better to be a little bit patient, make sure that when we get updates out that they would happen reliably, and unfortunately that caused a delay in getting things out. We're pretty optimistic that we've gone through that learning process and that we're not going to face those kind of issues in the future, but we want to get all the way through it. The second question that people have asked about is who approves updates or who decides when they can ship? And when I look at a lot of the comments in the blog posts, there's a lot of assumptions that people are making and frustration that people seem to be having around the fact that different mobile operators have updates coming to the phones on their networks at different times. The fact is, from our point of view, mobile operators have a very real and reasonable interest in testing updates and making sure they're going to work well on their phones and on their networks. And especially if you think about large operators with huge networks, they are the retailer who sells the phone, so they have to deal with returns, they take the support calls, and they have to worry about whether their network will stay up and perform well for everyone. And for the most part, the large operators think about updates very similar to the way they think about selling a phone at a store. They want to make sure that it's going to work in a way they understand and is going to be predictable. And from our point of view, that's quite reasonable. And our belief and understanding is that it's standard practice in the industry and that phones from all different vendors undergo operator testing before the updates are made available. The thing that's a little bit different about our process is that we build the update and we deploy it from our Microsoft servers to everyone. And we've decided to deploy updates when they're ready for open market phones and for the operators that approve them. So the operators that have a quicker process or require less testing, the updates come out more quickly. And that has sort of the unfortunate effect of if you're one of the people on an operator that's taking longer, you might know that other people have the update while you don't. We made a decision to do that rather than go through all of the testing and wait for an end date and then give it to everybody at once, because that would result in some people getting it later. We're still going through this and getting reactions from everyone and trying to figure out the best way to do it. We think that these things will go faster in the future, but we also think it's pretty reasonable to support the operators in their need and desire to be able to support phones and support their customers. So that's sort of the answer to the question about who decides when they go. And then last, have we learned from this and do we think it's going to get better? I would definitely say yes. We brought many years of PC experience to the table in terms of infrastructure for doing updates, but the fact is that phones are different in some pretty significant ways that we've now, I think, got a handle on. One is that OEMs do a lot more of the core operating system code on phones than they do on PCs, so those manufacturing type issues are different on phones than they would be on PCs. Similarly, the mobile operators play a role in testing, and we're still trying to figure out the best processes for doing that. We have tried to improve the team that does this infrastructure. We've added people. We've staffed it up to make sure we can do it as quickly as we can. We've improved our infrastructure and our testing methodologies, including some of the things I described earlier. And we're trying to get better at communicating about all of this. And I know it's been frustrating not to get very clear and specific facts. One thing we've struggled with is each of these things involves us and the OEMs or handset manufacturers and the mobile operators, and it's hard to coordinate which things we can say about what other people are doing. We're going to try to keep getting better at it. We've added the Where's My Update page. We're going to update it regularly, and we expect that we're going to get these problems licked and get good at this and have no problems in the future. So I just wanted to talk about that, give you a little bit of our perspective and some of the facts, and now I'm going to move on and talk about apps and some future of Windows Phone stuff. So before I jump in on the next version, it's worth a quick look back at what all you have been able to accomplish in terms of apps for Windows Phone. And I want to say a big thank you to all of you. What was represented on the screen there was the 12,000 plus, nearly 13,000 apps that are now on the marketplace just 6 months out of launch. There's north of 35,000 developers that are registered, 1.5 million tool downloads. We're seeing really good apps, which is something that we care a lot about. We want end users to delight in the quality of these apps. We're seeing intriguing apps from individual developers that do really cool and fun things, and we're seeing great brands. There's some terrific recent brands that have come online, like ESPN and the New York Times and Zillow. So the marketplace continues to fill out. We're deeply appreciative of the work that you all have done to help make the Windows Phone app marketplace a compelling place for end users to get apps. Now I want to start looking forward and talking about what's coming later this year. We have a significant update that's going to be available to all users of current Windows 7 phones and will be available on new phones in the fall. Our code name for that is Mango, so you'll hear me and us say Mango. And I want to talk to you about a bunch of the stuff that's coming for developers in Mango. We're not yet talking about the end user features. These are the things we're doing for developers. And I'm going to cover these in three areas. The first is things that we know you'll care about that you've been asking us for to increase your opportunity. How can you sell more apps to more people and get more engaged users using your apps in a more satisfying way? So I'm going to talk about some of the things we're doing to improve your opportunity. Second, I'm going to talk about new platform capabilities that we're delivering as part of the Mango release that will let you build better apps for end users. And then last, I'm going to bring Scott out, and we're going to transition over to Scott. He's going to talk about improvements that we're making in the tools and runtimes and show you how you write some of those apps and how much better the developer experience is going to get with this update. So that's what I'm going to cover. Let me start right in and start talking about the opportunity. Opportunity is really about getting you more customers and improving the number of people that are using your apps and getting access to them. And the first thing that I want to talk about here really is the scale of users. A lot of you probably have noticed in the press that in the last few weeks, separately, IDC and Gartner both issued reports suggesting that by 2015, the Windows Phone ecosystem would be the second largest smartphone ecosystem in the world. We were pretty excited to see our strategy validated in that way. No doubt that was helped by the developer support we're getting and the fast rise of apps in the marketplace. I think people are looking at us and saying the platform is credible and is growing quickly. And it's certainly also greatly helped by the announcement of the Nokia deal. We're incredibly excited to have Nokia as a partner. I've been spending a bunch of time with them. People in our team have been spending time with them. We're making really terrific progress in engineering work. And actually, to that end, I wanted to take a moment and introduce to you Marco Argenti from Nokia, who wanted to come on stage with me and talk to all of you, including some of the Symbian developers who I know have come to Mix to hear a little bit about Windows Phone and Windows Phone Platform. So Marco, why don't you come out and say hello to our Mix audience here.
Thanks, Joe.
Sure.
I'm very excited to be here. Thank you. Good morning. Great to see so many developers. And really, I wanted to say that Nokia, we're really, really committed to our partnership with Microsoft. And I think together we can build a fantastic ecosystem. And we have the scale today to reach hundreds of millions of customers all over the world. We're really working very, very, very hard right now to create the first Nokia phones, Windows phone. And you know, we're all running really fast. And as you see, I'm wearing my running watch. And you know, the opportunity is really to bring the creativity of all the developers to customers on over 190 countries that today already are downloading over 5 million apps per day and growing, over 112 mobile operators. We actually are big believers that mobile billing is a fantastic asset, because every time we introduce mobile billing, transactions volume actually go up 4 times. In certain countries, that's actually by far the preferred way for consumers to pay for content. So that's really a great business opportunity and a great asset that we can bring to the partnership. And today, there's already a way to reach those customers if you develop with Qt and with the other Nokia application environments. And I think that opportunity then becomes, in the long term, a great opportunity to develop on Windows also for our Symbian customers. And it's really about great mobile products with your creativity that is brought all over the world to create stuff that is fun and is useful, and I think also that is profitable for you. So in short, I think we're in a fantastic moment right now. I'm totally excited about our partnerships, and I think you know, this ecosystem is something that will be actually beyond what anybody right now is managing. So thank you for inviting me here.
Thanks very much for coming, Marco.
Thanks a lot.
We appreciate
Bye-bye.
It.
Thank you.
So let me talk a little bit more specifically about some of the ways that we're going to increase your opportunity. There's creation and commerce and letting you build apps and sell them in more places. And then there are better ways for you to find apps. First thing I want to sort of talk about is the Mango update this fall is going to support 16 additional languages beyond what we supported in Windows Phone 7. You saw the screenshot there of some of our Asian languages. We're trying to really bring the typography and user experience sensitivity to these new languages, in particular the Asian languages, and do something that's going to be beautiful and attractive and well appreciated in the countries where these languages are spoken. In addition, we're going to increase the number of countries where people can buy apps. The countries where you can create apps. Today, you can create and submit apps in 30 countries, and we're going to increase that to 36 countries. So there will be a wider range of places around the world where you can submit apps to Marketplace. And then second, as I started to mention a little earlier, we're going to increase the number of countries where end users can buy apps from 16 on Windows Phone 7 today to 35 this fall with the Mango update. It's a big stretch, big reach for us to get the marketplace into that many more countries and increase the surface area into which you all can sell apps. So we're excited to make that announcement, and we think it's going to really help continue to boost this ecosystem. And in particular, working with Nokia, who's strong in a lot of these countries around the world, we think it's going to be a great opportunity for all of you. Next, what I want to talk about is some of the ways that we're going to enhance the phone experience and the marketplace experience so that once people get the phone, they can get your app. So I'm going to move over here because I actually am going to begin with a bunch of demos. And the first thing I want to talk about is some of the ways that people are going to use the phone to find your apps. So if we can switch over, there we go. Today, I should give you the standard demo caveats. All the demos I'm going to do are on a very recent build of our Mango. We're trying to do wireless here on stage, and many of you have your phones on, so expect a few glitches. It's all among friends. I know you'd rather see recent code, so we're going to try to show you. So this is a recent build of Mango, and the first thing I want to talk about is helping end users get to your apps better. So imagine I've got a bunch of apps installed on my phone. Of course, I can set up live tiles. But if I'm installing 30, 40, 50 apps, I'm going to be more likely to use the app list over here. And there are a few things that we're doing to make it easier for end users to get to your apps if the list is really long. We automatically detect a long list now, and you'll see here the letters present in the list, just like we have in contacts. We've implemented a jump list for apps. So if you want to get to Twitter, you touch A, you touch T, boom, there's Twitter. You can launch it. It's super fast and easy. I've been using this on my phone. It's surprising how addictive it is to jump over there, hit a letter, launch an app. So small thing, nice enhancement, something we've heard feedback on and we tried to improve. I'll give you another example along the same lines. You might notice right there's a little search button. I can now touch that and do text typing to search my giant list of installed apps. So let's say I want to launch my Amazon app. I can type AM. Boom, it's filtered right away to Amazon, and I can launch the app. But even better, potentially, from your perspective, right there in the same list is a link that will help me as an end user find something on the marketplace. So I want to transition over and talk about how we're improving the marketplace for end users to get to your apps. I'm just going to touch Search Marketplace there, and assuming our connectivity is working on stage, in a minute you'll see some of the things we're doing to make the marketplace better. Right away, you might notice a few things that are going to be a great enhancement for end users and help them find your apps. I've done a search here, and the first thing you see is it's filtered just by apps, better than when we shipped Windows Phone 7. And there's a lot more metadata shown here. The publisher is shown, the price is shown, the rating is shown. And this list is provided by top downloads or popularity of apps. So users can find the apps they want. If what I was really looking for was music, then I can pivot over and see the music kept separately from the apps. If I wanted to find a podcast, we're going to have support for podcasts on the device in the marketplace in the US this fall. I can see all the podcasts that relate to Amazon and so on. So it's a lot quicker and easier for users to find the stuff they're looking for. And even beyond that, we've tried to improve the way people look at apps before they buy them and the buying process. So here I've opened up Amazon Kindle, which is out there in the marketplace, and we've made this a little bit easier for people to navigate through. I can look at reviews in a full screen pivot. I can pivot again and see screenshots a little bit better and easier to navigate. And in the spirit of trying to help users find, discover, and install more apps, we're dedicating a whole pivot right there next to the details, giving rich information about related apps that you might want to get if you like this one. Those are some of the things we've done there. I'm going to click to install this. We've streamlined this process. For free apps, you confirm one time. We automatically navigate over to the app list or the games hub where the app's going to be installed. And you see right there the Amazon Kindle app, as soon as I get network connectivity, is going to start installing. There's a little progress bar. When it's done, the tile will light up and the app is installed. So we've really tried to make this process easier for the user, from the launching of apps to searching for apps to finding them on the marketplace and getting related apps suggested to simplification in buying and installing. I want to also broaden this and talk to you about something that we've done that's a little bit different, and in particular is a new feature I'm really excited to show you for the first time here. As you know, one of the ideas behind Windows Phone 7 was to introduce hubs, where a user could go to one place and see all of the stuff related to photos, or all of the stuff related to games, or all of the stuff related to people or music. And just as a refresher course, I'm going to go into the music and video hub here, where you see there's my music collection that I might have synced with my PC. If I pan over, there's my history. This is music or video I've been playing, whether it's coming from our built-in experiences or your app. You get to integrate with the hub there in history, and also new, whether it's our stuff or your apps. Over here on the right, we have this today, but we've improved it a little bit in the Mango update. There's a place for third-party apps to appear. So if a user goes to music and videos, and they're really using, let's say, Last.fm or Slacker, those apps are present and taking over the hub, and it's one place that the user can go to do all those things with apps. This helps users find apps more easily than navigating through screens and screens of icons. That was a sort of thematic idea for us. And what I want to do now is show you a brand new feature in the Mango update that is the same basic idea, but gives access to your apps when users do searches. So what I'm going to do actually is use our built-in multitasking UI here and pan over. We pre-set up a search over here. I did a search using the search button, typed movies, and got a search result. Here I have my web search results, my local search, and so on. And as you've seen in Windows Phone 7, we give a Bing instant answer here when I do a search for things like movies that tells me movies near Las Vegas, Nevada. I can touch that, and this is a movie experience, assuming we have connectivity, coming from the Bing service that will show all the movies that are here locally. Let me try this again. I'm going to plug in my USB cable here and see if I can get network connectivity that way. In fact, I'm going to do this search again. There we go. Let's try that. Okay. So I've done a search for movies. I touch the instant answer. I get a list of movies that are playing now. We'll choose source code. That seems sort of thematically appropriate. And in the Mango release now, as you saw in Windows Phone 7, when you do a search and you find restaurants, we have a restaurant card or a place card that gives you interesting details about a place, and we hang functionality off that. Well, here's a movie card for the movie source code. I could pan to the right and see showtimes, or if I pan to the left, all of these cards, which come with search results, places, movies, and so on, now have a pivot for extras. Just like in the hubs, this is a place where we're going to connect user actions on the phone with your apps. Now think about the scenario. I'm out in the town. I use my cool voice search. I say, movies. It gives me a list of movies. I find a movie I'm interested in, source code. Now I want to watch a trailer or see what the critics are saying or learn about the cast. Well, IMDb would be a perfect app to give me interesting information. And rather than leaving my search task, going back to screens full of icons to find the IMDb app, then launch it, then navigate all the way through the IMDb app, I can just, from the movie source code, launch IMDb as an extra, and using a deep link, IMDb jumps right to the relevant content for me, so I can scroll down and see what the critics are saying, I can watch a trailer, I can pan over and see the cast, and so on. We think that this idea is going to help users get more value out of your apps, enjoy their app and phone experience a lot better, and keep improving the phone in a way that delivers on that whole glance and go idea of getting you in and out and getting your tasks done more quickly. So we're pretty excited about this new concept, Search Extras, and helping users get value out of searches and your apps. So, thank you. So that covers off on the first topic area of improving your opportunity and getting users to your apps. And now what I'm going to do is spend some time talking about the platform capabilities, the kinds of things that we're doing that are going to enable you to build better apps. And I have three areas I'm going to talk about. I'm going to talk about HTML5 in the browser first, and then some core phone integration, and then I'll wrap up and introduce Scott to talk about developer experience. So let me come back here, and I'm going to switch over, and I want to talk about the web experience. As many of you know, the Mango release this fall will include support for IE9. The phone has IE9 built in, and the thing that we've done that's interesting is the core web browsing engine on the phone that does HTML rendering and JavaScript and all that sort of stuff is the same code base moved over from the PC. The same exact code that is just shipped and is now getting installed on tons and tons of PCs is the code base that'll be on the phone. And as a result, we get... Thank you. Yes, we're excited about that too. As a result, the user gets benefit because they have a fast, high-performance browser engine, and you all get benefit because the way markup gets handled on the phone and the PC will be the same. Now, it's true that the graphics capabilities of phones are less than the graphics capabilities of PCs. Yes, you have full access to all that hardware acceleration, but the GPUs typically are not as powerful. There's a little less memory, and the screen size is smaller. So it's not like you're likely to build one site for both, but there's still huge benefit in the markup and scripting being identical between the phone and the PC. The other thing that's beneficial for you and for end users is that HTML5 standard offers lots of great stuff that's going to make websites work in a smooth way on the phone. So first I'm going to show you a couple of examples of HTML5 standard support in IE, and then I'm going to show you how the hardware acceleration helps with performance. So the first site I have loaded here, this is a website. I'm looking at IE9 on the phone. We've moved the address bar down here to the bottom so we can dedicate a huge amount of screen real estate to your content. The first website I'm showing is a sample HTML5 audio website. So imagine I've browsed on the web, I'm looking at an audio service, I can move over here and I'll touch the play button. And hopefully you can hear this, we have a little mic on stage. I'm now playing audio. I can press the skip forward and play different audio. All of this with standards-based HTML tags. If I press the start button and navigate out of the browser, just as we now will support background audio for native apps, we support background audio for HTML5 coming from the browser. Ah, thank you. Glad you like that feature. Also, if I'm on the start menu, I can use the phone's volume controls to pause the HTML audio. So that's a first example. The next thing I'm going to do is I'm going to switch over. I'll show you. Here's the tab UI. I want to switch over to a real-world website. This is not a sample that we put together or built up or anything. This is boston.com, the website of the Boston Globe. And what the folks at boston.com are doing is using HTML5's video tag to have standards-based support for video on their website. And on our phones, that's great because it lets a user go straight to the Boston website. I'm going to navigate over here, press play on the video, and you see H.264 video, natively supported on the phone. It's quick to load. It streams very nicely. We'll get to actual quality here. You see the quality of the video looks great. We provide a full screen viewer with user controls right there for pause and resume. And if I go back, of course, I'll go right back to the website. Also, actually, while I'm here, it's worth mentioning, I've seen people posting on blogs with IE. Today on Windows Phone, some people are disappointed that in landscape mode you don't get the address bar there on the bottom. Well, you can see here in IE9 on Mango, we fixed that. When I go back to portrait, it rotates around and moves back to the bottom. So that new design helps to make the landscape and portrait experiences a little bit more consistent. Okay, one more demo. Now I'm going to switch over to favorites, and I'm going to move this USB cable out of the way. Hopefully I keep my connectivity. And I want to show you an example of the performance benefit that some HTML5 sites are going to get with the hardware acceleration that's built in. So let me bring some friends on stage here alongside our Windows phone. I've got an iPhone 4 and a Nexus S and a Windows Phone 7 running IE9. Remember, same IE9 core browsing engine with hardware acceleration onto the phone. So what we're going to do is we're going to load an HTML5 speed reading demo on all three of the phones. So let me try to get these ready, and I'm going to do my best to launch them basically simultaneously. In fact, I'm just going to give the iPhone a little head start here because I have only two fingers. So we'll start the HTML5 speed reading there. And now I'm going to start these two at the same time. Ready? Here we go. 1, 2, 3, go. And let's watch these browsers in action. Now, down at the bottom, what you'll see is a frame rate. And you can see the hardware acceleration gets the Windows Phone frame rate up to 23 here. Android is going at 11, and the iPhone's at 2. And you see the page is loaded. There we go. Windows Phone 7's browser is finished rendering the page. The Android phone is almost there, and the iPhone is a little ways behind. Thank you. We're really very appreciative of the work that Dean and his team have done on the PC to introduce HTML5 standards-based native browsing with hardware acceleration. It's good for the PC. It's great for phone users, too. And we think it's going to really make a lot of end users and a lot of you really happy this fall with that capability on the phones. So that gives you a look at the browser. Now, let me talk about some of the platform capabilities we're adding for native apps to get richer and better. And in particular, I want to talk about the topic of phone integration. There's a lot of things we're doing in this release to enable you to better integrate your apps with the data and the services and the sensors on the phone. So there's three categories of work we're doing that relate to phone integration. The first is user experience enhancements, and there's quite a few of these. We've improved the panorama and pivot control so that your apps will look and feel faster and better and more like the native ones in the phone. We've done a lot of work on live tiles. We're enabling multiple live tiles per apps, animations, ways for your code to update live tiles in the background without push. You'll see more of that later. We're enabling you to access the ringtone setting so all of you can innovate and get ringtones out to users. So that's some of the user experience kinds of things we're doing. In terms of core support, there's a long list of things that we're adding for you in this release. There'll be support for TCP/IP sockets. We have a built-in SQL database that you can use. A lot more launchers and choosers. Yeah, thank you. A lot more launchers and choosers and better data access to the kinds of things that people pick when they use the launchers and choosers, and data access to the contacts and calendar store on the phone so you can more richly integrate your apps with the user's data. Thank you. Then last, there's a bunch of work we're doing to let you integrate with the sensors on the phone. This fall, you'll be able to get... Thank you. You'll be able to get the... You'll be able to get access to the raw camera data. We're adding support for the compass and optionally devices this fall will have gyro. And there's some cool stuff we're doing there that I'll explain later. So having made these announcements, let me walk over here and give you a few demos of some of these things so you can get a sense for how they work. Oh, yeah, sorry, I forgot. Before I go to the demos, a great example app that we've been excited to work with a partner on is Skype. If you think about Skype as a whole experience, it wants to have great networking support. It wants to be able to have access to the contact data on the phone. It wants to have a user experience that integrates and looks nice. And we've had a terrific working relationship with folks at Skype, and we're excited to see Skype come to the platform this fall when all these sorts of additional enhancements are available. So I wanted to mention that, and now I will switch over to some actual demos here. The first thing I'm going to do, if we have that, can we get that on screen? First thing I'm going to do is show you a demo of a ringtone example. I mentioned that we're adding support to the platform for you and your services to take audio files and set them as ringtones. So I'm going to give you a quick example of that here. So here you can see I've run an app. It has a bunch of pivots for ringtones that you could imagine are out on a web service. There's one interesting example here that might be appropriate for my ringtone. Let's see if I can play the preview. Oops.
Developers, developers, developers. Yes, that would be appropriate for me this week.
So let's say I want to make that my Windows Phone ringtone. I can just touch. The file is downloaded from the web service, and now the ringtone API is used where I can specify I want this to be set as my ringtone or simply add it to my ringtone list. Voila, it's done. It's now a ringtone. And we hope this is something that all of you will embrace and go do lots of cool stuff with. So ringtones. The next example I want to show is an example of an Amazon shopping app and how it can take advantage of some of the new things that we announced using sensors and user experience integration to make those sensors work in a slightly interesting way. So I'm going to launch the Amazon shopping app here. And let's say I'm going to do a search. What I have here is a book. We're going to switch over here. This is 101 Windows Phone 7 apps. This was written by Adam Nathan, who actually wrote 101 Windows Phone 7 apps and then wrote a book about how you write all those apps. And actually, I think you can find this in the store out there. But really, let's take a look and see if it's less expensive on Amazon shopping. So I have the Amazon shopping app here. And I'm going to do a search for a product, but instead of typing the name of the book in, I'm going to use the new support for the camera feed to do a barcode scan. So I'm going to start that up. You can see here, I'm just going to hold it over the barcode. It's already recognized. It buzzed. And there you go. Actually, I'll put this right over here. Amazon has recognized 101 Windows Phone 7 apps, Volume 1. It's $32 on Amazon. Now, you're saying, that's cool, we're glad we have that, but the thing that we're doing that's kind of interesting here is when you think about this user experience of scanning a barcode, in that particular case, I had to launch the app, navigate around, find the UI for scanning a barcode. Useful, but not particularly convenient. We thought we could do better. We're the Glance and Go platform. So what we're going to let you do is pin live tiles that deep link into your app right on the home screen. So here I'm going to choose pin to home. And what I get right there is a live tile that jumps right to the barcode scanning. So maybe I don't actually need this one anymore, so I'll get rid of that one. And instead now, if what I am, I'm an active barcode scanner in a store, I just touch that, watch how fast this is going to launch, it goes right to the barcode scanner, and now the camera is up and I'm scanning my barcodes. Just taking one step, not requiring a user to navigate through a whole bunch of stuff to get to the barcode scanning functionality. So we're excited to see the kinds of things that you all will do with that functionality this fall. Now let me talk a little bit about sensors. A lot of phones have access to sensors, and we're adding more of it this fall. But there's one thing that we wanted to try to do that would enable all of you to write apps faster and enable more people to write great apps with sensors. It turns out that when you have a compass and a gyro and you're trying to position objects in the real world, getting a big raw stream of data can be battery consumptive, and we wanted to sort of make that work a little better. It also requires some pretty tricky math to get right, and that increases the length of time that it'll take developers to write apps and maybe disqualify some people from writing some kinds of apps. So we spent a bunch of time with Microsoft Research, who had been trying a bunch of things out, and we're excited to announce a capability in the platform we call Motion Sensor, which integrates the compass and the gyro in an interesting and simple way to make it very straightforward for you to write motion-oriented apps. And I'm going to show you an example demo of that now. So let's switch over here. We worked with the folks from Layer. You're all familiar with Layer. I'm going to launch the Layer app here. I don't know if you can see that up there on the screen. Layer does augmented reality and lets people create layers. So we created a sample layer of the location of tweets at Mix. So I'm going to launch that. And now you'll see we're switching over into a augmented reality mode. I'm going to turn it this way and aim it at the audience. By the way, don't bother tweeting because this is sample data. And you can see as I scan around, the position of those tweets in the audience is shown right out there. You know, we're panning around. And there you go. You get the sense for how that works. They're staying in place, and this is using that motion sensor API to get this up and running fast and easy. Now available to all of you developers on Windows, well, not yet, this fall available to all of you developers on Windows Phone 7. So this is what we're excited about, and we hope you'll all take advantage of that as well. Okay, My last topic in terms of platform capability is multitasking. I'm sure you all paid attention back in February at Mobile World Congress when we announced a few things. We announced Twitter support in the People Hub. We announced IE9, and we announced support for multitasking. Well, today at Mix, we're going to give you a whole lot more information about how that multitasking works and some of the unique features that our multitasking solution involves. Basically, what we said at Mobile World Congress was close to what's on the screen now. First, we're implementing fast app switching. So when a user navigates away from your app, it's just suspended and not put to sleep totally. We try to keep it there as long as we can, as long as we have memory available. So if a user goes back, we wake it back instantly, and they get an instant resume experience. So that's a nice thing. Second, our philosophy is really to try to make sure that the battery performance stays very good on Windows Phone. So we're implementing a number of common multitasking scenarios in the OS so that they can be handled on your behalf. Background audio is a good example. A file download service will be part of the platform that you can use and will guarantee file downloads. Alarms, so users can get pop-up notifications. And then there's one other thing we're doing, which I'm going to talk about in a minute. But before I do that, what I want to do is switch over to a demo and show you a couple of real-world apps that are now in progress and going to take advantage of some of those multitasking features. The first one, background audio, I'm excited to announce and demo for the first time Spotify coming to Windows Phone 7. Those of you, we're pretty happy about this too. Those of you from Europe, I'm sure, are probably very excited, Spotify being very popular over there. So here's the Spotify app. I can pan around. You can see it's a nice panorama. I'm just going to do this quickly. I'll go into an album. The track list is shown. I can click a track to start playing it. There you go. You can hear music is now playing. And the thing that our users will be excited about is that when I navigate away and go into other apps, check my email, all these sorts of things, music continues to play. And if I use the volume controls there, you can see they're available. And I can pause, skip tracks, the track information is shown, and so on. So we're excited to have Spotify coming to the platform. And we know lots of end users will be as well. And we're excited to have you use some of those multitasking APIs in your apps. Next up, I wanted to give you a quick look at fast app switching and our multitasking UI. So I'm also excited to show you for the first time. I'm going to pan back here. And you might recognize there in my back stack the familiar UI of Angry Birds, which we're showing for the first time here at Mix. Perfect. Angry Birds, I'm excited to tell you and everyone else who's following on the internet, will be available on our marketplace on May 25th. That'll be available for Windows Phone 7 users, and then, of course, it'll take advantage of these multitasking capabilities for the Mango release coming later. Now what I want to do is talk a little bit about a unique thing that we're trying to do in our multitasking approach. If you think about the problem of how to enable arbitrary code to run in the background, that gives the most flexibility for user scenarios, but it has a big downside in terms of its unpredictable effect on the battery. The Android platform, for example, has arbitrary third-party code running in the background, and it's quite typical for users to need to do task management on their own or figure out what apps are doing what and affecting the battery. We wanted to enable a lot of the scenarios of background code, but we wanted to do it in a way that could protect the battery. So there were a few things that we thought about in combination. And what we're going to describe today is a new thing that has background agents, which you write as part of your app, a separate part of your app, that we schedule in a battery-friendly way, sometimes periodically, running for a short period of time when the user's on battery, and giving you events like when the user plugs into power and has Wi-Fi, so you can go feast on that data and that power. And we let these things update tiles and do things in the background. We call these live agents. They are our attempt to balance those two problems of letting you run code in the background, but make sure the user has a highly predictable battery experience where they don't have to actively, personally manage running processes. Later on in the talks today, we're going to describe this in more detail. And in some of the talks later today, we're going to show you the very simple setting UI where a user can go change the policy of whether a particular app's live agent is running in the background or not. So what I want to do is show you one last last demo example of an app that actually is bringing together a bunch of these multitasking and platform integration concepts to give sort of a rich notification experience for a common scenario. So I want you to imagine I have some flights. I'm going to go to Australia. So I'm going to be flying Qantas. And down here at the bottom of my start menu, I've already added one tile for my first flight. You can see there the live tiles telling me I'm on Qantas flight 3112, leaving Las Vegas from Terminal 1D. You saw the animation. That's new. At 10:50 a.m., and it's green. It's on time. I'm not late. All is well. But I'm going to scroll up here and actually launch the Qantas app and now show you the app and how we're going to use these live agents and some other capabilities to give me a good experience as a user wondering what I need to do for my flights. So here's the Qantas app. You can see there's my frequent flyer info. There's the flight that I have this morning leaving Las Vegas and going to Los Angeles. And here's a flight that I have tomorrow night leaving Los Angeles and going on to Melbourne, Australia. Well, it's almost time for me to go, so I'm going to take this and actually pin it to my start menu as well. So now I have two tiles for the Qantas app, each representing something that I care about, my flight today and my flight tomorrow. And you can see they're giving me different notifications. That tile was telling me check-in is now open for my flight tomorrow. Okay, that's useful information. Let's say I'm going to go back in here, and I'm going to go through the check-in process so I know I'm checked in. I touch the live tile, and as you saw in other examples earlier today, the live tile links deeply into the app. I could choose check-in now. I won't bother to do that. I could look at my arrival or booking info and so on. Imagine that I checked in. Time has elapsed. It's now important for me to get to the airport. I'm here on stage with you when really I have this 10:30 flight. What am I doing? In a few seconds, the app's going to notify me, hey, here's an alarm, taking advantage of those multitasking capabilities. You got a flight. You should probably be thinking about getting going. You're within this time window. And in fact, if I scroll down now and take a look at those live tiles, you see this first flight has turned from green to red because it knows my location. Its background live agent is checking my location, checking the time, saying, okay, where you are, based on the time, you better get going to the airport or you might miss your flight. The red tile's giving me as an end user a cue that I might want to do something about this. So I'll touch it, launch right into the Qantas app, looking at information about that flight, and now the app is handling this case for me. It says, not sure if you'll make it. Alternate flights are available. I can expand that and see what other flights. I could change my flight to one of those, or I might decide, I'll leave right now, and I probably have a chance to make it. In fact, this app's going to help me out by showing one of our new launchers, which is the ability to jump right into directions. So if I'm going to head to the airport, I can get very clear step-by-step directions to get me there. The app is using all of these capabilities, new live tile features, multiple live tiles, deep linking, live agents, background notifications to make my experience of figuring out what I need to do to get to the airport a lot better. So, thank you. So I'm going to wrap up my demos and my section of the talk with that, trying to summarize all those benefits. Really what we were trying to do and what I talked about was give you better opportunity to connect with and find users and sell your apps and give you capability to build richer, better, more compelling apps that integrate in a deep way with the unique phone experience on Windows Phone 7. Thanks a lot for your time. I'm going to introduce Scott, who's going to now talk. Oh, before I do that, I forgot one quick thing. I know on your minds, when will you get the tools? And so I'm going to tell you, we'll have these tools available for you next month. We don't quite have them yet. We have the last bits of polish we're putting on them. As Brandon Watson likes to say, I think you know Brandon Watson, we're waiting on the delivery of unicorn tears to get the tools out to you. But they will be free. They will be online. They will be complete. They'll work well, and we'll let you know as soon as they're available. And with that, I'm excited to introduce Scott to come back out and talk about the developer experience, the tools, and how you go about building all this stuff. Thanks very much for your time. Scott Guthrie.
Well, thank you. It's great to be back here. Joe just finished talking about some of the great user experiences that we're bringing to the next version of Windows Phone. I'm going to spend a little bit of time now talking about how we as developers can build great games and applications for it. The development tools for Windows Phone today are the best on the market. And with this new release, we're going to be making them even better. We're introducing a ton of new capabilities that we're pretty excited about. And what I'd like to do is actually just to start off with is show you a quick demo of some of them. So I'm standing here in front of is a machine that has Visual Studio 2010 Express for Windows Phone on it. This is actually the new version that has the Mango tooling built in. And I got a game here, which is called Marble Maze. And I'm going to go ahead and quickly run this application on it. And one of the things that's nice about the Windows Phone tools that we have today is that it has a built-in emulator so that you don't actually have to have a physical phone in order to do development. And so I launched this game, loaded up inside the emulator. It does everything that the phone does. We can actually change the orientation a little bit so it's a little bit easier to see. And what I have here is this Marble Maze game that's in the marketplace today loaded in it. I can hit play, and 3, 2, 1, the game will start playing. Now, this is a nice game. You use accelerometer on your phone, and you kind of try to make sure the marble doesn't fall in a hole. That works great on a physical phone, but one challenge that you have today is that with an emulator, it's pretty hard to actually simulate gameplay as part of that. So one of the nice things that we're adding with the Mango tools is a new additional tools option here that brings with it a couple of additional capabilities to the emulator, one of which is accelerometer support. So what I have here is a 3D version of my phone. See here now, within the emulator, I can actually control. I'll be honest with you, last night I was getting ready for the keynote. This was the hardest part of the keynote I was stressed about, is avoiding the holes. But anyway, you can see here lots of cool things you can do here. You can also play pre-recorded gestures. So for example, this particular game has a shake gesture to reset the game. I can just click shake, hit play, and it can actually simulate that gesture immediately within the tool. So it makes it much easier now for you to go ahead and simulate accelerometer within the emulator. You don't need to have a phone in order to do it. Let's take a look at a couple other benefits that we have here. I'm going to load another application and show off some more emulator features. And I'm going to load a really cool application here called Fourth and Mayor. How many people have tried this game or this app out? Yeah. Jeff Wilcox is here at the event. It's his application. It's a phenomenal Foursquare application. It's location-based, so basically you go to a location, you can check in with Foursquare. Really, really nice application. Now, from an emulation perspective, with the emulator we have today, the downside, of course, is we don't really give you an easy way to simulate a location because you're always at your PC. And so for an application like this, you end up having to write a little bit of code to do your simulation for GPS. What we've done with the emulator is added support now so that you can click on a location tab on the additional tools, and you can now pick where you are location-wise. So if I want to pick somewhere in downtown Seattle, I can just click on the emulator. Notice we've just updated the emulator so that it thinks it's now in Seattle. It's actually pretty cool in the sense that we can search as well within this map. So let's search on Mandalay Bay. Let's pick something in the middle of the casino here. And you can see we load up there. I can go up the strip. I can pick the Bellagio. Update gives me the ability to easily do real-time testing throughout my application. And just like with the accelerometer, I can also load predefined locations from an XML file. So you can see here I've got 6 locations on the map. I'm going to say, hey, let's walk this strip every 2 seconds. Let's change locations. And now I can simulate multiple locations all at once directly within the emulator. So those are a couple of benefits that are coming as part of the emulator. Let's now switch gears and talk about some of the other tooling benefits that we're pretty excited about. One in particular that I'm really excited about is our new profiling support that we're building into the phone tools. This will be part of all the features I'm showing here today are part of the free version of our phone tools. And this profiler stuff that I'm going to show is pretty darn cool. It basically allows you to very easily identify hotspots within your application, pinpoint problems, and it'll actually walk you through the code that you need to fix in order to address them. And so what I'm going to do here is just sort of show things off is I got an application here called Home Advisor. And I'm going to run this application. It has some performance problems. And what I can do inside Visual Studio now is just hit Start Windows Phone Performance Analysis, and it'll bring up this little dialog here. And this dialog basically allows me to pick, do I want to measure execution time, in which case I'll measure GPU and all the visuals that are being drawn, as well as my code execution, We're also adding support for memory allocation, so I can track on a per object basis how many bytes of memory are being generated, who's holding onto what, and optimize my memory as well. For this particular demo, I'm just going to measure execution time. I'm going to launch the application, and assuming my 30-foot USB cable backstage is working. Yep, it is. If we can switch to the camera here, you can see we just deployed this application onto a real phone and took a little while to load up. That's one of the performance issues we're going to need to investigate. And it's a simple app, and again, this has performance problems. So if you notice my list scrolling, not as smooth as I'd like it to be. And if you notice when I go ahead and slide, it's really jerky. So we've got some performance problems in this app. We want to go ahead and identify how to fix them. So I'm going to close out of the app. Let's switch back to Visual Studio now. And you'll notice Visual Studio is gathering all the data from that particular phone. It's going to analyze and parse the log files. And then it's going to generate for me a report with a whole bunch of information about what was going on. And you'll notice it captures a ton of data. It's looking at frame rate, and it's telling me frames per second throughout the lifetime of the app how it's doing. 60 frames per second is pretty smooth. You'll notice at the downside here, we dropped about 15 frames per second. That's really bad. 30 frames per second is kind of on the edge. And you'll notice as we're doing certain things like list scrolling, we're a little jagtooth there. And so there's some issues we need to fix to make our list scrolling much smoother. We're also capturing CPU utilization. The green indicates the work you're doing on the UI thread. We capture memory usage throughout the application. We can look at animation storyboards, which ones are firing. We can look at whenever you're loading an image from a network. And we can also capture garbage collection events that are happening during the lifetime of the application. So just a ton of data. What's cool about this data, though, is not only do we just sort of show you the data, but we allow you to easily analyze it. So, for example, let's look at that startup time issue that we noticed. I can highlight any of the timeline slices within the tools, and it will go ahead and analyze the data, and it provides kind of some helpful warnings telling me what we think the problems are from a performance analysis perspective for that particular time slice. And so in this particular time, it's saying, hey, you're spending a lot of time on the UI thread doing something, a lot of execution going on. What's nice then is I can drill in to see exactly what we're doing. So now I'm going to go ahead and drill in, and I can see precisely where I'm spending my time, what methods I'm actually calling, what methods are on the call stack, how often, both inclusive and exclusive, they're actually running. And you'll notice here there's a bunch of system code running, and there's two hyperlinks within this list, one for new listings and one for parse JSON. Let's click new listings, and it'll jump directly into my code. So it's saying we're spending a lot of time in this method, this property, and this property is calling the parse JSON method, so let's drill into that. And you can see here, as part of my application startup, one of the issues that's kind of identified is this particular method, we're spending a lot of time parsing a JSON request coming in from the network. This is a good example of where, because we're actually doing it on the UI thread, we're blocking both the UI from rendering and the application from fully starting up. What we probably want to do is put this on a background thread, which would make it a lot more efficient and make my application start up a lot faster. And so very quickly, we were able to identify this is kind of a hot spot, and we can go ahead and change our code and actually make it a lot faster. Second issue I want to look at is that list scrolling issue on the houses. And so I'm going to highlight this region right here. Again, you'll notice the bottom here updates based on the data that we analyzed. And it's saying, hey, you're spending a lot of time in the visual tree invalidating certain things and drawing things. Let's actually drill in to understand why. And so I can actually directly within the profiler now analyze on a per frame basis what I'm doing on every frame inside that application that was drawn. And so you can see all the frames. I'm going to sort it on CPU time. So you'll notice on frame 170, we're spending an awful lot of time doing something. I can drill into that. I can see the frame rate, the frame count, how much time I'm being spent on the GPU versus the CPU. If I want to drill in further, I can go ahead and look in the function list. Again, we'll sort it. I can look down through my code here. And there's a method called convert that's in my code. Let's drill in. And you'll notice I have a sleep statement accidentally in there. If only all perf problems were that easy. Anyway, you saw how the tools can kind of quickly identify where you're spending your time, again, precisely pinpoint the problem, and give you a lot of data on how to fix it. Last thing we'll then look at is this panorama scroll at the far right, where it was really jerky. I'm going to highlight that region. Again, it's going to give me a couple of warnings and a couple of information, summary information details. One of the things it's saying here is you're spending a lot of time doing animations, and the animation you're doing is bumping you off of the GPU into the CPU and then back again, and that's what's tanking our frame rate. And if I go ahead now and actually drill into the storyboards here, I can actually see what are all the storyboards that are executing. I can actually see the entire visual tree of all the controls rendering. And you'll notice here I have a color animation using keyframe. I can click on that. And this is actually going to take me directly into my XAML. It's showing me that I have a forever animation that's running, and it's a color animation. And if you look at the warning, it'll basically say, this is going to cause you to have to bump off of the GPU into the CPU to do the color calculation and then back. You can replace this with a different type of animation and get much smoother animation as a result. So three sort of simple examples of how you can use the profiler to kind of pinpoint real-world problems inside applications and not only just get data, but more importantly, kind of identify how to fix them and make your application a lot faster. So lots of other improvements. Lots of other tooling improvements, but hopefully that gives you a sampling of just some of the great things that are coming. Again, the great thing is all of those features are available within the free tools. So I just showed you some of the new profiling tools that help you identify hotspots within your code. We've also spent a lot of time with this release, though, optimizing our own code as well and doing a bunch of optimizations that are going to make your apps work faster without you actually having to change any code to take advantage of them. And this slide right here just has a list of four specific performance optimizations that we've made in the Mango release that you get to take advantage of, again, without having to change any code within your app. And I want to spend a little bit of time just talking about each one of them. And I'm going to show a video of kind of a before and after, one running Windows Phone 7, one running a recent build of Mango, to kind of highlight the performance differences and improvements that you get. First one here is one that a lot of people have struggled with today, which is how I get really smooth scrolling. And in general, on mobile devices, list scrolling is a hard thing to get right. We've made a bunch of optimizations as part of the Mango release, which make smooth scrolling and user input a lot more efficient. In particular, we've taken user input off of the UI thread, and so we're now doing it on a background thread, which means that it never gets interrupted when you're doing a scrolling, and you get kind of immediate input stop notifications, and when you scroll up and down, it'll be kind of be buttery smooth. What I want to do is just show an existing a video here of an existing application running both on Windows Phone 7 and on Mango. No code changes, and you can see the difference. So left-hand side, you'll notice that when you scroll and you stop, it takes a little while to stop. Mango, it's instantaneous. Notice here as you're moving up and down, the UI thread's pretty busy. On Mango, totally smooth and immediately responsive. Again, the great thing is you don't have to change any code in order to take advantage of it. That's just a standard list box, and you get those benefits for free. Second optimization I want to quickly show a video on is image to code. With Mango, we've optimized image to code and the networking stack. So if you're loading images from a network, it no longer blocks the UI thread as you're doing it. And this makes infinite list scrolling scenarios where you're bringing data over the network much, much better. And again, here's another example of an existing application that has some problems with that and how it gets a lot better with no code changes in Mango. So you notice Mango loads much faster to begin with. But more importantly, when you reload that data, you'll notice that with Windows Phone 7 today, it basically freezes as it's getting the new data. It's a little chunky. With Mango, it's immediately responsive, even if the data hasn't already come in. And then basically, as it comes in, even if it's got high latency on the network, it'll still stay super responsive. With Mango, we now have a generational garbage collector that allows us to garbage collect memory without pausing the application. This enables much faster application startup and much smoother interaction, especially with games. So if you're allocating lots and lots of memory, instead of having a tiny pause from now and then, it should basically be constant and smooth throughout. And again, here's another video that highlights that benefit. So we're launching two applications. They're using XNA, so and they're allocating a lot of memory for graphics and buffers up front. Notice how fast Mango starts up. And you'll notice as kind of as gameplay starts that it's silky smooth. You never actually see any buffers or pauses, even if you're allocating lots and lots of memory. The last benefit I want to talk about is memory usage. We spent a lot of time with this release optimizing memory usage, and in particular making your own code, our own code, a lot more memory efficient. Generally, we're seeing about 25 to 30% memory improvement wins on user applications when they're running. And again, you don't have to change any code to take advantage of it. And here's a quick example of that in action. So here's the Facebook application. And you'll notice Mango loads a lot faster. And we're going to go through a couple scenarios. We're loading lots of messages as part of this. We're going to scroll through and just sort of show off a bunch of different screens. Exact same code in both. The Mango version scrolls smoother. But even more impressively is when you actually, at the end of the scenario, look at the total amount of memory being used by that application, it's about 30% smaller with Mango. Again, no code changes. You just get to take advantage of that for free. And again, as part of kind of the multitasking benefits that Joe showed, using less memory means it's more likely that your app will stay loaded inside memory when you're multitasking. So a couple of those performance improvements. Again, the great thing about those is you get to take advantage of them without changing code. There's a lot more performance improvements we've also made as part of this release that you can also benefit from. And then obviously the tools with the profiler will help you pinpoint hotspots within your own applications and improve them even further. So let's switch gears now and talk a little bit about capabilities. So Joe highlighted a bunch of the capabilities as part of this new release. Mango includes almost 1,500 new APIs, and here's just a few of them. They include a bunch of APIs that expose phone-specific capabilities. They also include the full Silverlight 4 API feature set. And I'd like to spend a little bit of time just kind of looking at a couple of these capabilities in more depth. First one I'm going to talk about is database. So Mango now includes a local SQL database that allows you to save and query data within your applications. We also now support using Link so that you can query against that database. And we do provide in the box a full object relational mapper that allows you to manipulate data and save it back into the database at any point. And I'd like to pass it over to Jaime here, who's going to go ahead and show an example of that in action.
Thanks, Scott. Good morning. Today I'm going to show you how local database is going to help an existing marketplace application. This application right here is FeedReader. Hopefully some of you have seen it. It's a very popular RSS reader. And it's got very great functionality. It allows me to manage my feeds. I can organize them. It's got really great navigation. It's got Twitter and Facebook integration. And my favorite feature is actually offline support. Every time I go on a flight, I usually click the sync button right here. It downloads all my feeds, and it allows me to read them while I'm 100% offline. It actually marks them as read as I go. And then when I get back online, it updates the server and says, hey, he read all these items, so I don't have to read them again. Again, it's a marketplace application today. And if you can think about it, implementing this offline capability was a bit of work. We have the feeds downloaded into isolated storage files. We have all these metadata we're keeping track of. And there's a lot of stuff to keep track of if we're doing it in the current 7.0 release. In Mango, what we've done is we've actually migrated it to use SQL CE and local database. What we found out first was our code decreased by 30% or so in our persistent layer. So we have a lot less code. It's much easier to read, a lot less stuff to keep track of, right? And the other thing that we've done is it's allowing us to introduce new capabilities and new features that customers have been asking for. For example, search is the number one feature that people have been asking for. And here, you see the code. In isolated storage, search was just not practical. We couldn't parse all the files, go search them, and do everything we needed in order to implement search. Using SQL CE, it's this one line of code right here to implement search. It's just one link to SQL statement, and as you can see here, we can even get fancy. We can go in there and say, here, search title or search description. We can do order by. We can do group by. We have much, much more powerful query capabilities that the database is doing for us. We don't have to do any of that work. So here, let me show you. This is the new search feature. And I'm just go there and say, search for WP7 dev. Again, I get fancy with my searches, so I can search titles only. And there you go. Search is coming in. No code, one line of code. That would have taken us hundreds of lines of code before. Thanks, Scott.
Thanks. Support for network sockets is also now built into Mango. This enables a bunch of interesting networking scenarios, uses standard network socket APIs, and let's see another example of that in action.
Yep. Let me swap code. So, you know, we had a planning meeting a few weeks ago, and we were going to say, oh, we have to show sockets. And we said, how are we going to do that? And Scott made a joke, and he said, well, for the last 10 years, every time I've introduced a new programming language, I do Hello World. And every time I introduce sockets, I do a chat application. Everybody laughed, and we kind of dismissed it. But while I was at it, I just did a Bing search real quick, IRC Silverlight library. And the very first result was this open source IRC.net library. So we're still at the meeting. Meeting's 90 minutes long, and I download the source. I tweak the project so it can run on, you know, Windows Phone, make a couple of line changes to the code, and there, before the meeting's over, within the next 60 minutes, I'm round-tripping IRC back and forth to an IRC server on my Windows Phone. Showed it to Scott, and he said, "That's it. We have a demo." So this is what you see right here. This is the IRC.NET library in action. Exact same code. I didn't tweak it. I didn't do anything in there. For those of you that want to see some socket code here, we create sockets the exact same way we do in Silverlight. You can see this is a TCP socket. It's all the code that you're already familiar with. Here's, you know, after that, of course, I still had to go in and do a little bit of work to get some UI. So let me show you the application we came up with. We're calling it WPIRC or Metro IRC because it's kind of a Metro UI on top of IRC. Here's some active rooms that I've already logged into. These are automatically logs me into all of these. I can see the top rooms where there's a lot of action going on right now. I can browse rooms and find, you know, rooms that I've never found before that I haven't logged in before. And of course, it's all about chat. So let me click right here to go into chat. Now, just so you know I'm not cheating, let me go here. And this is live. This is MIRC, live Windows Phone client. And I'm going to send a message back and forth. So I can go here and say, live from, you know, live.bcmeeting.com, hi. Right? So this is live. It's real code. Now, one thing that you can see here is the IRC client is actually taking advantage of the rich text box control. Now that we have Silverlight 4 running on the phone, I get rich text box for free. So that was a big pain before. Now we have it. And of course, I have to reply back, so just say hi back, right, with a little typo, and send it. And it works. Lesson for me is if you're an IRC, if you're a socket developer, it's live. We should probably shut it down before I get sorry. My takeaway, if you're a sockets developer today, these are the APIs you're already familiar with. They work. They're 100% compatible with Silverlight 4. It's the exact same APIs we've had for, in .NET for the last 10 years. So just go bring your code and start building Windows Phone applications. Thank you.
It's always great when you get audience participation in a chat application in a live keynote. And there's more coming on the screen, I can see, so we'll see how the keynote's going later in real time. But that was a great example of kind of how you can build an IRC chat application. And I think it's probably the coolest looking IRC application I've ever seen. I want to introduce now Mike Roberts from Kick Interactive. They're a startup that builds a messaging application, super popular. They've gained more than 4 million users in their first year. And here's Mike to actually talk about how they're taking advantage of Windows Phone to do it.
Thanks, Scott. Welcome to Mix, everyone. I'm Mike Roberts, Head of Mobile Development at Kick Interactive. I'm here to give you a sneak preview of Kick Messenger for Windows Phone and talk to you about the amazing platform that it's built on top of. Kick Messenger is the real-time cross-platform messenger that went from 0 to 1 million users in just under 2 weeks. We connect you to the people that are most important to you in real time on any platform. So let's go ahead and take a look at Kick. The first thing you'll see is your list of recent conversations. My coworker Vic is down at the conference with me. So let's go ahead and open the conversation with him and see what he's been up to. You can see exactly when our message gets delivered to Vic's device, when Vic reads the message, and when he starts typing his response. Now that makes your mobile conversations that much closer to being a face-to-face experience. Now, apparently, Vic's backstage. And the great thing about picture messaging in Kick is that you don't have to describe what you're seeing. You can simply take a quick photo in your conversation and put the person you're talking to right there beside you. I think Vic's having a hard time finding someone to take a picture of backstage. He wants to be up here. It's pre-release code, so bear with me. So the conference goes on all day, but this is Vegas. We're going to have to find something really good to do tonight. I know Ted's down for the conference, too, so we'll add him to the conversation. So we'll add him to the conversation. Now, kick conversations, just like your real-world conversations, grow and shrink so that you're talking to the right people at the right time. Inviting Ted to the conversation is simple. Just tap the Convo Info button at the bottom of the screen, click the plus, and we'll select Ted from our list of contacts. Just like that, Ted's now part of the conversation with us. Now, being a real-time messenger means being a part of your real life. And we know you're not going to be spending all of your time using our app. And for those times, Microsoft provides a powerful push notification service that's dead simple to use. If you can connect to a web server and send 3 lines of XML, you can add deep push integration into your app. Let me show you what that means for Kik. If I have the app in my pocket and I'm walking down the strip, when a new message comes in, Kik will let me know. I can simply tap the toast notification and be taken straight into the conversation with that person, and that gets you back to my real life so much faster. And all that power from just 3 lines of XML. Now, Microsoft's amazing developer tools let us build this application in a quarter of the time that it took on any other platform with half of the development resources. We'd love for you to join the 4 million Kik users already using the application and discover the difference for yourself. Kik Messenger for Windows Phone will be available in the coming weeks. Thank you. Enjoy the conference.
Thanks, Rob. Thanks. Cool. Let's talk about now about camera capabilities. So with Windows Phone 7, applications had to launch a separate camera app in order to take pictures. With Mango, applications can now directly control and stream content from the camera. Here's Ben here to show us a cool example of it in action.
USAA serves 8 million members with its banking and insurance offerings. Those members are primarily men and women of the U.S. military and their families. So by definition, by the nature of their job, they're actually much more mobile than the average person. As a result, USAA has had to be very innovative in their use of technology in serving those members. They were the first to provide remote check deposit and have actually processed over $2.5 billion worth of checks via smartphone. Let's have a look at how they're taking advantage of a Mango feature to deliver that capability to the Windows Phone platform. So here you see, actually USAA already has an application in the marketplace, but here you see that they've added the deposit at mobile function, which is the remote check deposit. I'm actually using Scott's device here. It's a little known fact, Scott actually asks us to make contributions in return for onstage demo privileges. And so I'm going to make my contribution right here on stage. So let me add the check amount. I'll accept that. And so obviously the most important part of the check processing is capturing the check image. And so I'm going to grab that. You'll see that USAA is using the raw camera API. You can see there the green guides that tell me exactly where to position my camera. And so that is very important because it allows me to grab an accurate and complete image of that check so it can be successfully processed. The next step here is to grab an image of the back of the check. So let me do that. That's important because we need to make sure that Scott has actually endorsed the check. You'll notice here that I'm actually using the hardware. There is an on-screen camera button, but I'm using the hardware button because that allows me to focus and, again, grab an accurate image. So now that I have that, I can actually accept. The next step is to verify that I grabbed the right images. I'll accept that. And now that's being uploaded to the USAA data center. It'll be then forwarded on to the check processing facility, and it will make it into to Scott's account by tomorrow morning. USAA is taking full advantage of the raw camera API to very quickly build an application that allows their members to capture check images and also ensures that those check images are accurate and complete and can be processed quickly. Checks in the bank, Scott.
I love that demo. I wish we could do it all day. So with Windows Phone 7, you could build applications and games using either Silverlight or XNA, but you couldn't have an application that used both. With Mango, you can now build applications that compose UI that contains both Silverlight and XNA at the same time. which enables you to build even richer experiences. And so here's a fun example of one of them. So I got an application here on a real Windows phone, projected out using USB, and it's a Mix Explorer application that's actually in the marketplace, I believe, today, and allows you to kind of see what's going on at the conference. This particular application has kind of a nice Easter egg added to it, and so if you click on the About, I click on the About in the right way. There we go. No, almost. There we go. They go to the About. You can see about the particular conference, and at the very bottom here it says About Me. And if you click that link, this is a Silverlight app, but it's going to basically load in a new Surface. It's a handsome man, but it's supposedly me. But the cool thing about this is that particular 3D model, it's a full 3D skeleton model, and it's interactive, so I can actually touch him. That sounds weird, but to move him around. And so it is fully interactive 3D. Down here we have Silverlight controls. So, for example, if I wanted to, I could zoom out or I could zoom in. go. yep. Anyway. Sorry for those of you in the front row. Anyway, so we'll focus on a different part. Anyway, so full 3D interactive. Again, the cool thing is we got 2D and 3D on the same surface. I can use buttons here at the bottom. That was a slider built using XAML. If I want to, for example, this is kind of my daytime gig. When I go out in the town tonight, I'll be looking a little different. If you see this character, it might be me. We can zoom out a little bit here. When I'm down by the pool, maybe looking a little bit more svelte there. This is actually completely anatomically correct. Seriously, yeah. Don't make me prove it. But anyway, it's all part of Windows Phone. Anyway. So we're really excited about the new release of Windows Phone. It delivers some great new user experiences, as you saw Joe show. And for developers, it exposes thousands of new APIs, a bunch of new capabilities, brings with it some really great free development tools that allow you to build awesome experiences for it. We're really looking forward to talking more at the show this week about its capabilities with lots of great breakout sessions, and really excited to see what you build with it. So let's switch gears now and talk about Silverlight for the browser. So last December, we announced Silverlight 5 and provided a first look at its feature set at our Silverlight Firestarter event. And the feedback was incredibly positive, and we're really excited this week to be able to talk about the release in more depth. Silverlight 5 contains hundreds of new APIs that open up a bunch of new scenarios and opportunities. And this is just a brief look at a couple of them. And I'm going to spend a little bit more time the rest of this keynote showing off a couple of them in action and how you can take advantage of them. Silverlight 5 makes premium media experiences even better. We're introducing, as part of this release, hardware-based video decode. This means now that you can exploit the GPU not just for rendering, but also for decoding your video on your machine. The benefit here now is even on low-end netbooks, you can still now enable 1080p HD video playback in a smooth way. We're also, as part of this release, integrating with IE9's new graphic extensibility. And so we can actually integrate Silverlight and as part of the IE9 hardware-accelerated graphics experience. And this enables you to get even smoother experiences on pages that contain both HTML5 and Silverlight together. Silverlight 5 introduces TrickPlay support for media. This enables variable speed playback of media content on the client with what we call automatic pitch correction, which basically means you can speed up videos without the people talking sounding like chipmunks. This is great for learning experiences, so if you're watching training, you can speed up the training to, say, 1.5 times the speed, and you can still understand what the trainer's saying. Silverlight also now can receive commands from remote control. This is great for enabling a 9-foot living room experience. And we think combination of these features plus all the great media features we already have in Silverlight really enables the richest media experiences on the web. And to showcase some of what's possible with Silverlight, I'd like to invite Lieutenant Katie Kelly from the United States Navy Blue Angels on stage to talk about the new website they're building with it.
Hi, everyone. So Microsoft partnered with the U.S. Navy Blue Angels and award-winning interactive agency Effective UI to create a whole new experience for the Blue Angels. So we're leveraging some of the latest and greatest technologies, including Silverlight, HTML5, ASP.NET, and IIS Smooth Streaming, to create this whole new experience. Let's go ahead and take a look at the site.
Solos, we're clear for takeoff. Solos, ready to rock Seattle, boss.
So our first challenge was to create a home page experience that really engaged the user and pulled them in and really set the tone for the rest of the site. So we've incorporated some HTML5 features like the video tag, the audio tag, and canvas to create an animated build-in, a user interface that overlays a high-quality video that's being used as a background. So let's take a little bit deeper dive into the site. The first section that we took a look at was the team section. Our goal for this was to really connect the visitor, the audience, with the individuals who make up the Blue Angels. So in this section, you can learn more about the officers, a very interactive interface. You can read their bios, you can learn about the enlisted team, and you can read all about what it's like to be a Blue Angel. Now, of course, the team members are the most important elements of the organization. But the thing that gets people really excited is the shiny blue jets. So we're going to jump over to the aircraft section. And we're going to take a look at the F-A-18 Hornet, the blue jets. Now here we've taken a really high resolution 3D model, and we've created an interactive experience that lets visitors and potential recruits learn more about the aircraft. So you can actually take it and rotate it around. You can also click on interactive elements that show you, in this case, the different modifications that the team makes to the jets that they inherit from the fleet. So we can click on those, and it'll tell us more about that stuff. Now, we've also incorporated some animated sequences that show off the different configurations of the aircraft. So here we can see the landing gear being retracted into the fuselage of the plane. So that's the aircraft section. Now, the biggest challenge that we had as we were working on this project together was to try and recreate the thrill and excitement of a Blue Angels flight demonstration. So to do that, the team collected three different camera angles for each of the maneuvers that the team flies and created a composite single video that includes a 3D visualization of the maneuver so the visitor can be oriented as to where the aircraft are throughout that maneuver. Now, using the video brush in Silverlight, we were able to make this video experience interactive so the user can actually click through the different camera angles and really be in control of the experience. So all these videos are delivered using IIS Smooth Streaming so that the Navy can ensure that the user is getting the best possible quality video delivery based on their connection speed. Now, one of the other features we incorporated is based on the requirement for accessibility. So we have closed captioning support built in to the video player as well. And in this example, you can actually read a transcript of the radio communications of the pilots as they fly the demonstration. Now, Silverlight also enables us to incorporate multiple audio tracks with each video. So I'm going to turn on the narration track, and we're going to go down and take a look at one of the most difficult maneuvers that Blue Angels fly, the double farble.
Approach once again, you should notice two significant modifications. While the wingmen, Lieutenant Tomaszewski and Lieutenant Curley, maintain that minimum wingtip to canopy separation, the flight leader and slot pilot are both upside down. From the right, the Blue Angel double farble.
So this maneuver is being flown about 50 feet off the ground, and it's pretty crazy. I mean, this is cool stuff. So that's part of the inside the demo experience. The Navy is in the process of deploying the site today, later on today. So please go take a look at blueangels.navy.mil. And one last thing. If you'd like to check out one of the shows that the Blue Angels put on around the country, we've incorporated an interactive map under the Show Information tab using the Bing Maps API. So you can go in and click on any one of these, and it'll pull up the map and show you all the locations so you can find one near your hometown. All right, thanks everyone.
Thanks, Mike. So as we talked about in December, the Silverlight 5 release brings with it a ton of new features and capabilities. Things like better text quality and richer text editing, vector printing support, a new 3D API, XAML debugging, and much, much more. And what I'd like to do is just trying to show off an application that kind of highlights a bunch of these new features and capabilities, is invite John Papa on stage to walk you through a great application that's been built with him.
Hey, everybody. My name is John Papa, and as Scott mentioned, I'm going to show you some of the new features in Silverlight 5 today. And to start off here, we're going to talk about building a house. So four features in Silverlight 5 I'm going to show today. There's lots of great new stuff. What we're going to show is building a house, and the first feature, obviously, is going to be Silverlight with 3D. So in this particular case, I'm going to build a house, and I want to choose some different homes that I've got here. I've got different camera angles. We're rotating around, give different positions, and I kind of like brick homes, so this looks pretty good. I'll choose this one. As I flip over, now I can see I've got full interaction with the 3D. I can zoom around the house. I can check out the roof, the floor. That's the floor. There's the roof. Zoom in, look inside the house, flip back down, and you see I'm getting really great performance. Things are rocking along pretty good. And great things about Silverlight 3D is you get the familiar and powerful XNA APIs that many of you already know, so you can really take advantage of that and build some great stuff. Another great thing here is we get something with doing GPU acceleration, so we get some great performance on here. So you can rock along at 60 frames per second by offloading, rendering the model with 3D with Silverlight and get this great performance, and you still have plenty of computing power to spare with the CPU. So this is a cool house, but I like something a little snazzier. So let's go over and look at something with a few more angles and curves. That looks pretty cool. So on this model, I'm going to decorate my house. Notice there's no doors, there's no windows. This is going to show off another feature in Silverlight 3D we call projection. It allows me to project from 2D space to 3D space and back again. So you'll notice this here, as I grab a door from the controls down here, and you notice the door is now on the floor, moves up to the walls, and it actually adheres to the 3D space. What's happening with this projection in Silverlight is I'm mapping the coordinates from the mouse, the XY 2D coordinates, over to the 3D space so it respects the model. Basically means that the door will follow along the house. Pretty easy, pretty simple to do. You can also see this with a tooltip. So as I zoom in on the house here, and you see as I move up and down, the tooltip moves around with the house. That's also using projection with 3D. Some very, very cool features that we've got. So let's finish building my house up. I need to have at least one window in my house so we can see what's going on. I'll build some shutters up here. We'll take some other elements. All this is interacting, the 2Ds and the 3D world. And let's put a light inside of the house because we like to be a little security conscious. So this brings me to the second feature in Silverlight 5 that I want to talk about. It's called binding and style setters, which gives you the ability to change different property values in one place, bind it to an object, and then have them update throughout the entire site through styles. So how does this work? Simply put, I can change and choose the color for my doors and my shutters down here with the swatch, and with a single click, it's binding to all the styles in the entire experience to load up on the screen. And we can choose some really interesting colors if we like to, like yellow. And that's great because it gives us all that binding experience. So now that we've got that going, it moves me to my third feature I want to talk about with Silverlight 5, and this is implicit data templates. This is really cool for really making your development process much shorter and without writing as much code. So over here in my construction list, you can see the prices that I have in the house. It's a little pricey, so let's fix that first. Let's give myself a nice big discount. That's not big enough. Yeah, I like that better. So I'm a good real estate agent, too. So we've got this great data templates over here. We see all of my items, and this is going to do for me, the implicit data templates are going to take all the data types that are bound in this list, and it's going to change how the appearance looks throughout the application. So what does that mean? It means that when I have doors, I can show different colors, different icons, completely different controls and elements. The door can show me energy efficient or steel. I can see down here for lamps, they're not doors, they're all in the same list, so it adheres and uses a different implicit data template to show different data values in this particular case. And all that really can shorten your development time. So this brings me to my fourth feature, and one of my favorites in Silverlight 5. This one is data binding debugging, which comes in really handy since I've got a bug in my experience up here. You notice the door has no price. I'm pretty sure it's not free. So it probably has a binding problem. So let me flip over to Visual Studio. And we can take advantage of the new feature for data binding debugging to see here we've got the total is my binding operation. And I'm looking for that value on my object. So it looks like it's OK to me. So let me set a breakpoint over here. And once I set my breakpoint, I don't even have to stop. I can go back, we'll re-render the page. And there we see we've got a breakpoint right inside Visual Studio. Very, very cool. But better yet, we can look down here and see what kind of errors we've got. So let's zoom in. Let's zoom in. There we go. Down here we see it says the total property is not found on door house. Okay, so I was wrong. There's something going on here. Let's figure out what's going on. We've got some great information down in the locals window. We can see the entire data binding pipeline and look at all the information, even more detailed information about the errors. But what I want to look at is what's going on in something called the final source. The final source shows me what am I bound to. It's a door. Okay, that makes sense. It was a door that wasn't showing the price. But I don't see any property in there called the price or the total. I do see one called total, though. So it shows me here and it's got a value of 200. That's what I should have typed earlier. Makes my life a lot easier. In like 5 seconds, I can figure out what's going on without even stopping my application. So now I can remove my breakpoint. I could even set a conditional breakpoint if I want to as well and just continue running along. Now, those are great four features, but once I build my house, I now want to do a little bit of a tour of it as well. So let's go ahead and take a look at the inside of my home and check it out. I wish my home looked like this. So I'm zooming around, we get some great performance with 3D again, changing the camera angles, notice the light values, the rotation, and let's check out the living room, and notice I've got a really cool picture of Scott up here. Doesn't everybody wish they had a portrait of Scott in their house? Really walks around, I'm getting awesome performance, running on the GPU, I can even go up the stairs, change the camera angles, and fly around the home. So in summary, what I want you all to take away is some great new features in Silverlight 5. We talked about the 3D, which got some awesome performance by running on the GPU. Gives a lot of power for the CPU to be fully left over. You've got 2D to 3D projection with that. You've got the XNA API, so you can start coding with this. And we also got the binding of style setters, and we've got the implicit data templates, which really make development life much easier. And one of my favorites, again, is binding debugging that you get to really shorten your development life cycles. And I'm really happy to say that this full experience, the house build experience, we're going to release that later this month, the full source code and the full application up on our site so you guys can see a great example of how to use Silverlight 5 to build great experiences. Thank you all very much.
Excited to announce that the Silverlight 5 beta, along with the Visual Studio and Expression Studio support to design applications with it, is now available for download. We'll ship the RTM release of Silverlight 5 later this year, along with the RTM release of Windows Phone Mango. We're really looking forward to seeing some of the amazing experiences that you're going to build with them, and we're looking forward this week to a bunch of great talks and discussions in the hallway about the technology. So we've seen a lot of great examples of user experiences today. What I'd like to do now is actually hand it over to Jeff Sanquist, who's going to show you how you can take your user experiences even further using Connect. Here's Jeff.
Connect is exciting. It is the fastest selling electronics device ever. Let me repeat that. The fastest selling electronics device ever. over 10 million devices sold. And you know, while those of us were dancing up a storm, playing a little volleyball, or rafting down a river, all from the comfort of our living room, there were a whole host of others, innovators, hackers, enthusiasts, that were doing things with Kinect on Windows that none of us could ever have imagined. And that is why we will be releasing the Kinect for Windows SDK. The Kinect for Windows SDK will give you full access to the microphone array, skeletal tracking, and you'll be able to write your apps in VB, C#, and C++. It'll be available later this spring, and at first with a non-commercial license, but we will be having commercial terms following on. You know, I think the best way, though, to really show what this is all about is write some code, show some demos, and have a bunch of fun. I'm going to have Dan Fernandez on my team come on up, and we're going to build our first Kinect app together. Come on up, Dan.
Jeff.
Hey, man. Let's do this.
All right. So with Kinect, we're going to build our first Hello World application. For those of you who have never programmed a Kinect, it has an RGB, a video camera, as well as the ability to get depth information, meaning I can see how close or far something is. So let's just show how you can build an application. So I have a pre-built main window here, and I'm going to drag and drop an image, and I'm going to put this in the left corner. And what we'll do is just size this first image to 640. Click Enter, and let's change the height to 480. So a 640 by 480 image. Let's drag one more image on here, and we'll just keep the size for that, and we'll add a button, and I'll move that there. That looks gorgeous. And I'm going to change the content here so we can just make it real clear that that is a start button. Okay, so let's jump into the code behind for our application. So one thing we should mention, we have a reference to the KinectNet library, which is a wrapper that allows us to communicate back and forth with the driver on this PC. So the first thing we're going to do, and by the way, some of these APIs, properties, methods may change, but at least this will let you understand conceptually how you can program Kinect. So we'll build a, let me full screen this so you can see this all. Kinect sensor equals new Kinect. Okay. So what I'm going to do is subscribe to some of the events that the sensor has, and I'll start with the dev frame ready, and hit tab and just have Visual Studio build out that event for me. And I'll subscribe also to the video frame ready. So what will happen is those events will fire when I'm getting a new frame, new information from the sensor. So for the first video frame, we're going to set that to that 640 by 480 image. So I'm just going to say image 1. Dot source equals e dot image. Let's do the same thing with the depth frame. This time image 2 dot source equals to e dot image. Okay. So the last thing we have to do is actually tell the sensor to start. So I'm just going to say sensor, when we click on our button, we'll start this, and I'll jump out of full screen.
I think you need like a demo or something up here, up there.
Do you want to be my Vanna White?
Will you be my Pat Sajak?
That would be swell.
Thank you.
Okay, so I am going to run, and with any luck, we're going to press start.
There we go.
Yeah. Gorgeous.
Okay, what I can do here, I can do a little bit of this, a little bit of that. Here we go. There we go.
Okay, that's going to take a long time.
Okay. That's a little bit better than Scott's thing up there, but we'll leave that as.
Yeah, it's going to take a long time to get that burn that out of my memory. So video frame on the left, depth frame, and as you see, the colors change depending on how near or far Jeff is. So pretty basic. We just did that in a couple lines of code. What I'm going to do is now get a little crazier, and we're going to build a very basic painting application.
Let's do it.
So what we're going to do is, in our depth frame ready, and I have a pre-built class here. Let's just jump to full screen to make this really easy. And I have a point p equals. And this is my just pre-built class. And I'll talk about what this does in just a second. But what we get when this event fires is an array of uShort that gives you the depth values, which means at a certain pixel, this pixel is at this specific distance. So I'm just going to pass this in. And I'm going to say distance.near. So what this does is returns the average point for all the near points, and you'll see what we'll be able to do with that in a second. Now, I'm going to cheat here and just have a code snippet for my draw line.
Hey.
Don't you wish Visual Studio, everything you could just do is code snippet and just spits out this massive thing? It's great. So, draw line. I have a point and I have a last point. So, if the value is -1, I'm going to ignore. If it's 0, that means it's our first one, and I'm just going to set last point to that point. Otherwise, what I'm going to do is every time that event fires, I'm going to draw a line from the last point to the new point. So we're going to be drawing a line here. And here are just some of the properties of my line. It's 20, it's orange, and the style is round. And the last thing we do is just add it to our window. So let's just jump up here. And once we have the average point that's near, we'll just call draw line and pass in our new point. So, Jeff, I'm going to ask you to Vanna White this again.
Okay, here we go.
And we'll press start and kind of move a little.
There we go. What do you think of that? Let's do a little bit of this and a little bit of that and a little bit of that.
That is gorgeous. Here, I'll give you a new clean surface to play with.
There we go. You know, I could do a 9 or something like that. That's one of my favorite numbers. It's not a bad color. So
that's awesome. So what this is doing is drawing a line based on only the close points. As his hand hits that, it actually draws in real time.
That is really cool. What do you guys think? So, not bad for about 3 or 4 minutes of a little bit of coding. Visual Studio, build your first Kinect app with Windows. I wonder what would happen if maybe we just had a few more minutes to go build something. What could we make? There we go. Okay, you had more than a few minutes.
Awesome. That's Clint Ruckus. So Clint, what would you say this is?
I would say this is a Kinect drivable lounge chair.
There's so many times I've been in a recline chair and needed to go to the kitchen. I'm like, there's no way I'm going to make it. So really, this is fabulous.
Yeah, it's all about that natural run.
So now you have some special wheels around here.
I do. Tell me about the wheels. So we have omnidirectional wheels. So it lets me do cool stuff like this. I can parallel park.
Ooh. That is going to be awesome to avoid the dog. You know, that's great. Let's go ahead and power it down.
Okay, we're going to power it off right now.
So we don't dive you off stage yet. So show me how to drive. What's going on with driving here? I see your two hands.
So what we have on screen here is we have basically two thumbsticks here. And when I go further up, it gives you can see the green power meters to all the wheels. Or if I go down, you can see it go reducing power to all the wheels. So it's very much like tank driving. What we do here is we send a value between 1 and -1 to our motors underneath via the Robotech speed controllers.
Okay, cool. And that the red and green we have in that corner, bottom corner there, what's going on there?
That's just giving us the point on the screen where
your hands are.
Hands are.
Sure. Okay. So, Clint, now you added a very cool, your favorite feature here. You got to show it off.
My favorite feature is, because it is a lounge chair,
automatic reclining via a Kinect gesture. All we need to do is, I think, add a cup holder, and we'll sell dozens of these. So, Clint, for people who want to build this themselves,
all they have to do is, once the Kinect SDK gets released, we'll be releasing the source code, instructions, and where to buy all the parts on Channel 9's Coding for Fun section.
So on Coding for Fun, you'll be able to download the app, and if you have a lot of spare money, you can build this yourself. So love it. How about a big hand for Clint?
We have a little bit of fun with our team. Microsoft Worldwide Telescope is this amazing application for Windows. It allows you to explore the whole solar system, the moons, the stars, and it's just this amazing experience. Now, I'm going to have Jonathan Fay come up. He works at Microsoft Research, and what he's done with Worldwide Telescope is he's enabled it with Kinect.
And now, with this, you can have your whole universe at your fingertips. Hey, Jonathan. Thank you, sir.
Microsoft Research, we've been working with agencies like NASA and the European Space Agency, as well as universities worldwide, to put together astronomy information and planetary data from all across the universe. And when we saw Kinect, we knew that we had to bring the universe to your fingertips with this great tool. Right now we're looking at the Earth and low Earth orbit satellites, and the green ones are geosynchronous satellites. And we can come out here and zoom out away from Earth and start looking at the whole solar system here and basically move around and see all the planets. Now let's go ahead and select another planet that we'll go to. We'll scroll over here to Saturn, and we'll go ahead and fly into Saturn. And as we're coming into Saturn, you'll see something that looks like a ball of yarn that a cat's been playing too much with. And this is asteroids that have been captured to be new moons of Saturn. But as we zoom into Saturn even more, we can see the ring system here, and then you can see all the other moons that formed with Saturn's rings. But the universe is much larger than our solar system. As our solar system moves off into just a single pixel, the rest of the stars that are around us are actually going to start moving from the constellation positions that you're familiar with, and they're starting to move around in 3D. And now we're looking at that band of stars that was the Milky Way in our night sky is actually our home galaxy. And so we're now looking from the outside of our galaxy. But our galaxy is just one of millions, and scientists have been studying with the Sloan Digital Sky Survey, trying to map the entire universe so that we can really see the large-scale structure of how our universe formed since the Big Bang. So I can come in here and explore and look at the individual galaxies and the detailed structure in this. There's a coma cluster. The Worldwide Telescope enables you to not just go through space, but also travel through time. And so we're going to go to an event that's going to happen in August 21st of 2017. And as we fly through the Milky Way, back through our stars, and come back to our home solar system, and look at Earth here, you're going to notice that we now have time moving forward in the future. And you can see as these satellites are orbiting, something interesting is happening. The sun is moving across the United States with shadow cast by the moon, and it's going to be the greatest eclipse of our lifetime. Within a day's drive of almost everybody in the United States, you'll be able to see this wonderful eclipse. I can't wait to see it myself. But you know, you can preview this at worldwidetelescope.org, and you can also come to our booth. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Thank you very much. How awesome was that? The universe at your fingertips is just unbelievable. Make sure you go to the Kinect Lounge. You'll be able to play with the Worldwide Telescope. We're going to have some of our other projects, but we're not done yet. You know, I think it's really important that we show the things that we at Microsoft have been building with Kinect on Windows, but we wanted to bring out some of the people from the community that have been doing some amazing things with Kinect. Laura Foy and my team is going to come out, and along with her is Michael Solner and Stefan Huber. They're with the University of Konstanz, and they're going to show us one of the first of the community projects that has been using Kinect on Windows. Come on out, guys.
Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you all.
Thanks, Jeff. Thanks,
we'll
everybody.
See you guys later.
This next demo is going to amaze and inspire you. Now, these two boys, armed with only a Kinect, some creativity, and a whole lot of brain power, created Navi, navigation for people with visual impairment. And Michael, why don't you explain to the audience what that is?
Well, Navi is a project that enables visually impaired people to safely travel in indoor environments.
Awesome. And now, let's take a look at what this man's wearing. It's a lot going on, so we're going to break it down. Let's start at the top. Well, what
top,
is this?
We have the Kinect helmet, and we decided to detect obstacles in the immediate surrounding of the person, and therefore we decided to change the default perspective of the Kinect and mount it onto a helmet.
So the Kinect is actually acting as the eyes for the visually impaired
Correct.
Person.
Right.
All right, moving on down. He's got a cummerbund of sorts here. What's this fashion statement all about?
Well, this is a vibrotactile waist belt. It has three built-in pairs of vibration motors, and okay. this is basically the feedback mechanism of the obstacle detection. So whenever there's an obstacle in one of the directions, left, center, or right,
right.
The vibration motors will vibrate.
So someone jumps in front of him, he gets zapped.
Correct, yeah.
Nice! All right, let's turn him around. We've got this custom-built laptop backpack thing. Is this the brains of the operation? What's going on back here?
Well, this backpack is basically for debugging and visualizing the state of the system because he's the only one who feels the vibration.
Okay.
And here you see at the right side the depth image of the Kinect, and we did an overlay of our obstacle detection mechanism.
Uh-huh.
And at the moment I am detected as an obstacle, and as I'm moving to the right, you can see that I'm tracked by the Kinect, and as I'm moving closer to the camera, I'm more danger to him, so the feedback gets more intense.
So the vibrations are actually stronger on his belt as well?
Correct, yes.
Awesome. All right, now we've set up these markers. Just sort of explain to the audience what's going to happen.
Well, these markers are for point-to-point navigation in buildings. So these markers have instructions encoded which tell the person where to go. And it's done by speech synthesis, by audio speech synthesis.
So we'll actually hear someone talking to him.
Correct.
Giving him directions. All right, great. Let's see it in action.
Turn left.
Nice. So the Kinect read the marker and knew exactly what to do.
Turn right. Door ahead in 3, 2, 1. Pull the door.
Well, you see that the instructions are based on distance to the marker.
Absolutely. Yeah. This is outstanding. I can't wait to see what you guys do next. Great work, guys. Great work.
Okay.
Unbelievable. All right, well, it wouldn't be a Kinect demo without a little bit of fun, a little bit of games. So I'm going to bring out Jared Ficklin from Frog Design. And we're going to demo Wall Panic 3000. All right, Jared, thanks for coming on. Now, Frog Design isn't really a video game company, so why build something like this?
No, we're more of like a bring design and innovation to life company, but we really believe in playful research and development.
Me too.
So this was a great opportunity to take technology that we use with our clients and just have some fun with it.
Absolutely, and it is a lot of fun. What would you say the inspiration was?
Well, at its heart, it's 8-bit gaming meets the Kinect. We needed something that was also really easy to walk up and play, and it needed to be as fun to watch as it was to actually play. But I think actually our team in New York who created this thing, they might just watch a little too much Japanese TV.
All right, well, we'll let the audience decide if it's just as much fun to watch, because it is a two-player game. So to play with me, I'm going to bring out actually someone smarter than me, someone better looking than me, and, oh, wait a minute, he wasn't available. Let's welcome Scott Guthrie. All right, Scott, are you ready?
I'm ready.
Have you been stretching?
All right, so the basic is you're going to be right around here, and the game's going to come up, countdown, and you're going to see a blobbly version of yourself. Match the blobbly version of yourself.
What I look like in the morning.
With the hole in the wall. Okay, you ready?
This is going to be on YouTube, isn't it?
We'll start with an easy one. Let's go.
All right, we're a team. We're a team.
All right.
Let's do it. Some music. All right.
We left off the C and the A, but if you can do the Y and the M.
Oh, perfect! Nice! Right here.
I'm glad you set it on easy mode. Now, this is I should probably let you know now that as much as we wanted this to be about computer vision, it's actually just designed to get you in awkward position.
Okay.
Oh, dear God. Okay. Oh.
Don't pretend
you have
today.
Of course,
Scott.
You have passed the roll call. Very good. All right, now this one's going to be a little more fun. You got to feather your hair out.
All right. Let's do it.
And you stop. Scott, are you Farrah or?
Scott's got it, for sure.
I don't know.
That little inner Farrah Fawcett.
I think the last minute reversal might have saved you there. Now, you guys, what's with your beliefs in the laws of physics?
Okay.
Yeah, I'm not a fan.
You might have to suspend him for this.
No, you leap all frogs.
It really is passable.
It's this not, close. This close.
You get a good sport.
Oh, good. Burn those pictures. Burn those pictures.
Oh, no. Those are going on Twitter.
All right, Scott, we're going to leave you alone.
Thank you.
Jared
so
and I
much.
Are going to work on that frog maneuver backstage. Yeah. If we could just. All right.
So, oh, this is going to show up on YouTube, isn't it? You've seen some pretty cool experiences today, and we want to be able to have you start building these experiences as well. As you heard earlier this week, we're going to be making available Kinect SDK so that you can download it and you can build these types of experiences yourself on your PC. And to help make sure you got everything you need, we're also pleased to announce that every attendee is going to get a Kinect. Yeah. You'll be able to pick them up either today or tomorrow. The locations are there. There'll probably be a long line. There's plenty for everyone. Don't worry. So pick your time to pick them up. And we're looking forward to seeing throughout all the conference the great things that we've shown. Looking to see how you take it to the next level. We hope you've been inspired. We're really looking forward to seeing what you create with it. I hope you have a great week. Thank you for coming to Mix. Thanks.